This week's episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co., the full-service refit shipyard at the heart of the Med, with large yacht facilities, in-house departments and berthing in its waterfront marina. To find out more, visit amicoshipyard.com. Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is our business editor Gabby Lazaridis.
Become quite the veteran at this point.
It's 2 weeks on the trot.
Yeah. Well, it'll be my podcast soon.
Is that your ambition?
To do the intro one day? Yeah, for sure.
Well, we are croaky voiced and a bit jaded and tired after a heck of a week at the Monaco Yacht Show. We're recording this a few days after the conclusion. A few tired eyes, a few bags under the eyes, although you look quite fresh.
Thanks,
Gabby.
I was about to be very offended. No. Good save.
Maybe it's just me.
You, on the other hand.
I'm a wreck. But it was a fantastic edition of the show, despite some challenges with the weather one day.
An absolute monsoon one day.
Yeah, the Thursday it was bucketing down. In fact, our very good friends from Amico, new podcast sponsors, said a lot of people that day, because their stand was right next to ours and they have this quite large covered area right outside their stand. So lots of people congregated under there, sheltering from the monsoon.
I was talking to someone who said that in the 12 years that they had been attending the show, it was the first time it's rained that hard.
Wow.
I was walking into the Hotel Hermitage for a press conference and I was absolutely drenched and I became really self-conscious because everyone in there looks fabulous and I felt like they were looking at me like, should you be here?
Last time we spoke about your wardrobe malfunction at the Cannes Yachting
this
Festival.
This one at least wasn't my fault.
Yeah, it was wild, wasn't it? I've been going for a decade now and I don't recall weather like that. I was quite happy with the cloud, but less with the rain. I love it when it's cloudy at Monaco.
I felt like it really just broke everyone down, though, to the point where everyone was just laughing and having a great time because we were all so miserable and there was absolutely nothing we could do about it.
It is such a shame, though, when it rains, but it's such a short show that one day of rain does kind of interrupt things quite dramatically.
But do you know what? I imagine it brings out the really serious clients, so it might be a benefit to the yard.
If you're going to lay down $500 million check through the rain,
yeah,
you know you're a serious buyer. Okay. We'll talk about very expensive boats. Let's start with some of the ones we got on. So I think I doubled my record last year. I saw 4 whole boats this year, which is something because, you know, you go to the boat show, but you're so often caught running between appointments and meetings and conferences and press calls and bits and pieces that you don't often get to stop and smell the boats. But I did this year.
How often do you spend on a yacht?
At the show?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, it depends if I'm with the judges. If you're with the World Superior Awards judges or BDA judges, you get a pretty comprehensive tour. So that's a real luxury. Otherwise, it's all kind of a half-hour whip through with some kind of stressed designer or owner's rep or project manager who wants you off the boat as quickly as possible because
they've given the tour 5 times already that day.
Yeah, they've already done the script a million times and they know you are not going to buy the boat. Well, my star of the show, the highlight for me was one of those comprehensive tours with the World Superyacht Awards judges of 122-meter Kismet, the new Lursen. Kismet was going to be the biggest boat at the show ever, but she was eclipsed at the very last minute by Golden Odyssey, which is just a wee bit bigger than her at 123.2 meters. But despite that, had a wonderful time on board Kismet, being shown by Pascal Raymond, who one of the designers responsible for her extraordinary interior. So we took about 2 hours. But that's what it takes for a boat that big. We spent basically the whole morning on board until I think the brokers got a bit impatient and kicked us all off.
Did you get to see all of it?
All of it, yeah. All the interior anyway. It was amazing.
Can you tell me about the Tron room?
Yeah, the Tron room was this amazing passage through the engine room. And it's got these blue neon kind of lines running down it. And it really is very Tron. And you look left and right into this double height engine room with these huge lumps sitting in there, impeccable, polished, stainless steel engine room. It's just, it's glorious. And I didn't quite experience, but I think I was told that some of those screens can be interactive, kind of infotainment screens. So you can kind of see, you know, RPM, speed, fuel burn, things like that, course, all that kind of stuff on some of these screens. But that was just one of many, many amazing spaces on that boat. And I'm almost lost for words walking through it because it is so detailed and textured and considered. There is not a square centimeter on that boat that has not been really, really diligently thought through. And the range of styles is quite interesting too. There's kind of what the owner challenged Raymond Langton team with. He wanted them to be inspired by Versailles. So during COVID, Pascal was telling me, Andrew Langton and Jason McCree, the three founders of Raymond Langton, went to Versailles, and apparently they were the only people there because it was COVID and everything was locked down. So they were walking through this vast palace trying to draw inspiration. And that's reflected in the boat. There's this kind of hall of mirrors, basically, in Kismet. But it's kind of a slightly more muted, modern take on Versailles because there's also like modern art on the walls too. It's extraordinary space and huge ceiling heights and balconies, chandeliers, winding staircases. There's like a beach club area, but not where a beach club would traditionally be. It's kind of on the third or fourth deck, and you walk through this door and it's just this kind of cream colored party space with lighting that changes according to the mood, that leads onto this huge aft deck with like a huge pool for a deck so high up with like 50 tons of water or something in it. It is just,
I think you're in love.
Mind blowing. It is a mind blowing boat. And the owner's office is kind of a Ferrari red with a huge sofa in front of a massive TV, a beautiful desk with, importantly, a copy of the October issue of Boat International front and center on the owner's desk. There were, yeah, it, every space was wow worthy. And it was a joy, actually, because, you know, you often see pictures of boats and you think, oh, it's quite rich, that style. But when you get into it, you think, actually, this is incredible. Everyone I spoke to about Kismet said much the same. Many were lost for words. It was just, it's just a beautiful, beautifully put together, very detailed, very textured, very well outfitted super yacht. I saw San, the 45 meter from Alia Yachts. Very different vibe on board, very beachy, very cool. Really relaxed vibe, and I really liked it. It's kind of just, the whole boat is kind of one long extended saloon with these successive terraces, as we've come to, that have become quite popular on boats, down to the water. So you walk out of this saloon with this great central seating area out into this big aft deck and then down a few steps into the water. It feels like a 45 meter day boat. That's the sensation, but it's a day boat with five very nice cabins on it.
I mean, I'm looking at it now. It looks almost militaristic.
Yeah, it's really cool, low slung, sleek, with this little kind of bubble up top where the raised pilot house is. The upper deck is fairly modest compared to the vast areas down below, but yeah, it's just that main deck. You see right from stern to bow, this clear sight line through, and the big windows in the main saloon. I wasn't very familiar with the boat, but as I got on and was having a look through with Gökhan, the CEO of Alia, I was, yeah, very, very impressed. I was fortunate also to look at Pink Shadow, the 58.3-meter from Darman. Another absolute standout boat at the show. Stunning interior by Design Unlimited. And a bit like Kismet, you kind of see pictures and think, wow, that's going to be almost overwhelming. But you walk through, and rather than being overwhelming, you're just blown away by the texture and the detail and the quality of the design.
What and stops it from being too much?
I don't know. It's just the skill of the designers, I suppose. Because sometimes it doesn't always translate in pictures, and it just looks like a kaleidoscope, but it all just makes sense when you're on the boat. You know, the beach areas, lots of bamboo and woods and you know, amazing art, you know, and it hangs together spectacularly. And you can imagine that kind of boat deck area when the tenders are deployed, it becomes this amazing kind of party room with a central bar. It's just really cool. It's not overwhelming, it's just really cool. And the master cabin, I loved the master cabin. It had this kind of integrated lounge, and as well as the main bed, it had a day bed off to the side. I love a day bed on a super yacht. I think it's a great feature. Yeah, it's really poppy, really cool, but not you know, overwrought or overworked or too much. It just feels right. And the last of my quartet, I saw Special One, the 52-meter Sportfish from Royal Houseman, with design throughout by Vrijpak. They did the naval architecture, the exterior, and the interior design. And it's one of the most talked about boats at the show, I think, Special One. People were very, very keen to get on board. And I had a slightly longer tour with Bart, one of the creative directors of Vrijpak, on the final day of the show. So we spent a bit more time on it than usual. And she just towered over everything next to her on Quai des Etats-Unis. Very calm, cool interior. And the decks just keep going up. Every time you think you've reached the top of the boat, there's another staircase taking
really
you
tall.
Higher. So tall. And when you eventually get to the top of the Tuna Tower, you kind of look over.
The what?
Right at the top of the boat, basically.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, like where you spot the fish from.
Do you fish from up there?
No.
Okay.
But it's a good vantage to spot shoals and things like that. Did I say shoals? I
yep.
meant schools.
Okay.
They're not shoals of fish, are they?
Well, you need to see if the boat's going to run aground.
That's
so.
That's true. Good for spotting shoals and schools.
Yes.
Yeah, the view's incredible. And just imperious. And the foredeck, although that's cool, my favorite space was the foredeck. Where this, it's like a party space. There's a DJ booth, DJ station, basically, and these incredible speakers lever up out of the forward superstructure. And it creates this kind of wall of sound with these huge speakers. And apparently, the owner likes to
I'm
get on the decks.
I'm seeing so many more DJ stations nowadays. Yeah. I also saw something at the show that made me laugh. It was a disco ball suspended on a crane of an explorer. Did you not see it?
Was that on one of the Darman sport vessels?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, yeah. They like to do that. Yeah, Special One. Very impressive boat. And the side, superstructure just keeps going forever. But in a 52-meter platform, they've still managed to maximize these vast side decks, kind of promenade side decks that lead to this cool party space at the bow. Yeah, awesome boat. I was very impressed with all those four. I felt I was very lucky to have a look at those four. So what did you get on?
I actually got on three, which I didn't think were that many, but after hearing that you doubled your record, it's making me feel pretty good about myself.
Yeah, three's good.
I got on the T-52 Akula from Baglietto. That was the first one I went on. I mean, you can see why the boat's just done so well. It's a gorgeous exterior. The inside is clean. It's bright. It's modern. And so it's really, they're on their 16th hull, I think, is in build already.
Yeah, that model has just been a smashing success for Baglietto.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then I got on Bilgin's Eternal Spark, their 50-meter. The standout for me on that yacht was their staircase, which I've I think they've done before on a different building, but it's so gorgeous. It's got these cutouts of glass on the stairs, and it's got all of these mirrors around, so it refracts all the light that comes through the reflecting pool at the top of the stairs, and it creates this dappling effect all the way down. And you can see from the top, if you're on the sun deck looking at down into the pool, you can see the bottom deck.
We should really record these podcasts. We should video record these podcasts.
I was going to say, are you not recording? I was going to get really scared.
Gabby's making some wonderful hand motions here.
It just lends itself. But that was stunning to me. I don't think that it's unique on that boat, but it's a standout Bilgen feature, which I got to see in person for the first time. I really appreciated that. But my favorite tour had to be Almax. I think the 50 steel from San Lorenzo Almax. I think it was largely because there was just been so much buildup around that boat. Mm. But I was more interested in the technical side. It's the yard's first fuel cell powered yacht. So the hotel load is powered by green methanol, which then gets transformed into hydrogen through the fuel cells. What surprised me, though, is it doesn't actually take up as much space as I thought. So it only compromised a little bit of the master suite bathroom. So depending on the owner's priorities, I don't think it'll be as much of a trade-off as I was expecting. Something that was interesting about that tour, though, they were telling me the only difficulty with the system right now, which they say is performing really well, is that because the owner can't be licensed for the distribution of methanol, they have to go back to the shipyard every single time they want to refuel. But that's up to the rest of the industry to build up the required infrastructure.
Did they give a kind of timeline when that for when that infrastructure might be in place?
Not really. They're hoping in the next 3 to 5 years, maybe. But they made an interesting comparison to shipping, which was that industry is largely up and running, but that's mostly because you have these established trade routes. Mm. So they only need to make essentially 20 different fueling stations, and then you're good to go. But it's going to be obviously much more difficult with yachting because you need to have them essentially everywhere. A yacht needs to go refuel. Other than that, though, it's got a pretty wild interior layout. There are 9 levels stuffed into 5 decks. So a lot of split levels happening. And there's all these different places that you can go and hide away and get some privacy. But another effect of it is it managed to open up this giant double ceiling height dining room in the main deck, which was, I've never seen anything like it. It was really cool.
That does sound cool. A lot of people, I'm gutted actually. I didn't get to see Almax, but a lot of people were talking about that around the show.
Well, you got to see Kismet, so.
Yeah, I did get to see Kismet. Not a bad trade-off. Yeah, Almax, yeah, lots of people, yeah, making some very positive noises about Almax. San Lorenzo are quite good at rethinking GAs. In the smaller Almax, Perotti's previous boat similarly had a kind of split level, kind of lower and upper saloon, but you walked in and you were presented almost by 2 decks immediately in front of you, and you kind of walk up or down.
It was interesting too, because you board from the beach club, but the beach club is the main deck.
Mm.
So it kind of creates 2 extra decks, because you have to go down to kind of a secondary beach club and then up to the mezzanine area. It was very trippy.
Yeah. But wasn't it great that in a 50-meter platform, there's this wildly different arrangement?
It's really interesting anytime you see something unique, I think, in yachting, because, I mean, they all have special features, but every now and then you've got this one yacht that just completely shakes up all of the conventions in the industry. And I'll be interested to see if more yachts start doing that. I mean, you saw it with the Oasis deck. As soon as that came out, that essentially became the standard. Every single shipyard came out with their own foldable platform, open beach club deck. So I wonder what other reverberations this will have on the industry.
Yeah, kind of traditional beach clubs in this kind of size range are quite passé now, aren't they? You don't often see it because they're quite modest, unless you can have a big old space down there.
Well, there was something interesting. Tankoa, I made a note to mention this later on, but they announced a new model and on their yacht. They acknowledge that a lot of the industry is going this way, but they've also heard from consumers that they want more privacy. So they've created this kind of reverse beach club take, where you have the beach club outside, but then you've got this hidden secondary beach club that is hidden behind the traditional beach club. So you go back down and you get your like a secondary beach club where it's just more private, more hidden.
Okay. I haven't seen that boat.
Well, I'll discuss it more
later.
We'll
discuss it more later.
Clearly you were reading all of our news articles that we were putting out.
Well, the problem the WhatsApp at the end of the week is just full of unread messages and the inbox goes nuts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you feel very guilty. I mean, this week is just largely one of apologizing to people for not getting back to them last week. So sorry. Your apology is incoming. Everyone who emailed me last week and expected a response. One thing I did notice was it seemed to be harder than ever to get on the boats, especially the big stuff.
You clearly don't know the right people then. I'm kidding.
I don't remember it being this case 10 or so years ago. I seem to remember it being slightly easier, but now there's, brokers and owners reps have put a few more barriers to entry up so that, anyone wanting to get on the boat has to be qualified.
Is that just because there's more people attending the show nowadays?
I don't really know. I think it's just more, perhaps it's just owners a bit more cagey about letting hordes walk through their boats at boat shows. Privacy concerns, perhaps. I don't really know. But it definitely seemed trickier to get on the big stuff than usual. And, the bigger boats, brokers might have, the shipyards, the boat's kind of being represented by the shipyard and the broker often, and so they each split the visits and you might get one or two an hour per side. So they've got to be quite strict about who they let on. So the idea of walking up nowadays to one of these big boats and saying, do you mind if I have a little wander about, is that just doesn't really happen anymore.
Actually, you know what that tells me is that there's more potential owners that they want to get on the yachts than in previous years, which I guess you could take as a good sign.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Security. I mean, wow. I don't remember it being that tough to even get into the show. Body scans and everywhere. Sometimes there was one entrance you had to kind of show your pass, then show your pass again and get scanned. It was, that was new. The Discovery Pass thing, which is a few years old now, but I remember there was a few moments where I was queuing up to get into the kind of the cordoned off bit on the first day with people who didn't have the right pass, who felt they did have the right pass, couldn't get through. So there was a few kind of crosswords exchanged between people without the right pass and the guardians of that cordoned off area. But I mean, they're only really, it's a bit of rain, tough to get on the big stuff and a lot more security.
But I mean, all of the downsides were minor.
They're my only whinges, really. Apart from that, I thought it was a fantastic show. Some great events. We did an owners' club function on board Planet Nine. In fact, in the October issue of the magazine, which you might have picked up at the show, there's an interview with its owner, Nat Rothschild, about Planet Nine's fantastic global adventures. Some great photos in that feature too. The Big Boat International Party took place at Monte Carlo Beach on the Friday night.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it was a blowout, wasn't it? It went really well.
There was I didn't even know that there was a ring for champagne bell.
Yeah.
And just a hand with champagne sticks out of a hole. And honestly, it's a good thing I didn't know that it was there because I probably would have abused it. But the food was fantastic. We had live music, which apparently they did something. They performed at the boat. Golf Invitational.
Yeah, before. So we did the golf event back in May at Camaral near Barcelona. This band performed and we were so impressed by them. We booked them for the Monaco party. They're fantastic, really good at engaging with the crowd and getting people dancing. Yeah, I thought it was great. It was a really great night.
I think you messaged the group chat that night or the next day, best party for years, full stop.
Yeah, that was my message. Because it really was. I don't remember. I looked around at one point and like a proud kind of dad and thought, this is going all right.
Yeah.
Quite happy with this.
Good luck topping it next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite. But I think we'll be back there next year.
Oh, great.
We found a good formula there. And we had some happy hours, didn't we, on the stand? And then the one on Thursday was with our good friend Wayne Sorensen, who's launched this fantastic new yachtwear brand, Sorensen. So a few of the staff were modeling.
That collab proved very popular.
Yeah.
There were so many people around the show asking me where they could get one of those hats, the Sorensen boat branded hats.
Yeah.
Actually, when I went to dinner one night out of the show, I was walking out of the restaurant and one of the chefs behind the counter flagged me down and went, you know, where can I get one of those hats? And I went, give me a free tiramisu and I'll get you one. And he did.
Did you get a free tiramisu?
I did.
Oh, well done, Gabs.
I went back to give him the hat, I will say, but the restaurant was closed and it didn't open until 7:30 p.m., at which point I needed to be at the party. So I had to leave at 6 a.m. the next day to get on my flight. But I will be back in Monaco in November for the Explorer Yacht Summit, so I will track him down and give him his hat and thank him for the tiramisu.
Yeah, you can't leave that debt unpaid. Yeah, that's good. Wayne was kind enough to give me some of the Sorensen gear, which I wore on the Thursday. And it's not something I would never walk into like a shop and go, right, that's what I'm buying.
But why something smart?
Yeah, I know, something that's smart and vaguely like trendy. Everyone said, look, unless they were just blowing smoke up my ass.
Nah.
I don't know. Everyone said,
chief editor, no way.
Everyone said I looked quite smart, which is quite nice. But it's great gear, fantastic. And Wayne's a lovely fellow, and he's got a real eye. And so that we had lots of the caps and bags were given away, and it was just a shame that happy hour coincided with the monsoon.
I kind of loved it. It forced everyone to go into the stands.
That's true.
So everyone was together having a good time. And it added this, I don't know, I just found it really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone was in good spirits. Because it was, you know, we were cowering together. Just before the show, a few events took place. We ran a round table with Hill Robinson we gathered with a kind of a long table in the new restaurant Marius, which is where Stars and Bars used to be. Rather nice restaurant, actually. I was quite impressed. We had some owners and some brokers. Sorry, owners and captains. Just talking about yacht management and where it goes right and where it goes wrong, which was fascinating for me because I'd never had such an in-depth conversation about yacht management before. And then, Gabby, you gave a presentation as well.
I did. I started my week with a data presentation at the Marine Money Super Yacht Finance Forum the day before the show started. There was a really great panel, actually, it was a powerhouse panel. It was Marco Valle, CEO of Azimut Benetti, the sales director at Lursen, Michael Bremen, commercial director of Dahman Yachting, and managing director of Freddy Group. It's crazy to see them all in one room. But basically, they were talking about clients developing new attitudes towards yachting, possibly because the market was changing to more American owners after Russia's exit. People are becoming more impulsive. They want to jump straight to bigger boats, so not even just essentially skipping the entire entry level, which shipyards are saying is a little bit more difficult for them because they have to essentially educate the owner during the build when they typically come in and they're a little bit more practiced. But the biggest issue they talked about was the labor shortage, so both in terms of production and crew. Apparently, they're struggling to make the industry appear sexy to people and attract them and keep them. And I actually wondered if Boat's new Yachts Foundation could help with that cause. So,
well, that's one of its central aims, to get just expose the industry to more talent, basically. So the wheels are finally turning on yachts, which is fantastic. And we're going to start raising money very, very soon. We've raised a bit already, but we're going to start pushing it hard. Working with the bureaucracy of the Charity Commission.
I can imagine.
I'll be
sure to push it the next time I hear a similar plight. But the other talk I found fascinating, actually, was about yacht accidents and insurance. So they had Sophie Nordland, who's a claims manager with New Coast. She was telling us that there's been this huge spike in accidents this year, which I'm sure everyone would have seen just with all of the coverage on boat. They're particularly for yachts over 30 meters. She said there's been a 21% increase since the previous peak in 2019. that the cost of the claims are rising due to inflation. Yachts are becoming more sophisticated, so they're more expensive to repair when they do break. She also touched on on the number of high-profile shipyard fires we've been seeing recently, and how those will affect future rates, but that it's too early to know how much. That actually poses an interesting question over whether or not that extra cost will then be passed on to the client, or if shipyards are going to be needing to shoulder that cost. But again, I guess we won't know that for a while. Maybe it'll mean a drop in larger boats being commissioned overall. Who knows? But yeah, it was fascinating. I think they're on their 17th Superyacht Finance Forum. So it was a really, really great way to start off the week. That just meant, though, that I was already tired when the show started.
Well, it's such an emotional and intellectual investment, these presentations, aren't they? That they really kind of suck the energy out of you. And then you've got to kind of G yourself up again for the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that they get easier, but...
They will.
Great experiences all around.
Yeah, great experience. And so we thought there was so much news coming out of the show. So we're going to whip through just some of the bigger stories generated at the Monaco Yacht Show. So, Gabby, why don't you kick us off with news from our Dutch friends at Heesen?
Yeah. There were so many announcements this year. People always seem to leave their best material for Monaco, but I fought tooth and nail to go to the Heesen breakfast this year because they always have this great spread on top of the Hotel Hermitage. It's got what?
You didn't go for the news, you went for the breakfast.
I did, of course, go for the news, and I'm glad that I did. But also, they know what they're doing and how to attract all of the journalists. And also, it's a beautiful vista. They've got this great view into the show. You're just mad because you didn't get to go this year.
I didn't.
They announced they're in a really great spot. Their CEO, Niels Vaessen, said the company is set to reach record revenues of $230 million in 2024, and their current deliveries extend all the way out till 2027. But the big news from their press conference was they revealed a new 62-meter steel superyacht concept called Project Monte Carlo, which seemed rather fitting. It's been designed by Harrison Eidsgaard, and their goal was essentially to create a simple profile with long lines of glass and a signature open waterfront beach club. So again, seeing that open design in the beach club with a 23-square-meter pool. It'll also be future-proof, so it'll allow for a range of alternative propulsion systems as those technologies become available, so you can put in whatever you need, whether that be a battery power, methanol-ready fuel tank, or a fuel cell.
Excellent. And over the road at FedShip, they released more details about their 75-meter fuel cell yacht concept called C. The design by Studio DeVoit was inspired by a diamond to mark the yard's diamond anniversary, which is pretty cool. So I saw some photos from the FedShip Captains and Crew Party with lots of sparkly outfits, which looked good fun, actually. Everything about the yacht has been designed to reflect and magnify light to brighten the interior, and it has been envisioned with a fully electric propulsion system.
Next up, Green Line Yachts officially moved into the superyacht sector with their GX Superyachts brand, which they launched at the show. The range is made up of aluminum.
What's aluminum?
Aluminum.
What's that?
It's Canadian. aluminium yachts from 24 to 56 meters, with the first 42-meter actually already sold, and it's under construction at SES Yachts in Tuzla. And true to Green Line's DNA, the new brand features a hybrid propulsion system with a serial hybrid drive, battery bank, and integrated solar arrays, which it actually already uses on its smaller yachts.
Another super exciting announcement was from Riva, which announced a new 70-meter flagship. 70-meter Riva, I never thought I'd see the day, which I thought it was a big jump for Riva. I think their current flagship is around 50 meters, 54 meters. The yacht will be a hybrid project and is already in build with an owner attached, and she is due to launch in 2028. So the first 70-meter Riva, just a few short years away.
It was quite a shock when it got announced. Benetti, meanwhile, unveiled quite a bit at its Monaco conference. It revealed a completely new lineup for its Beyond series, so its Explorer series. including a 57 and a 40 meter model. They both feature exteriors from Igor Lobanov, who intended for it to look something like an optical illusion so that it disguised what the inside of the yacht looked like from onlookers. They also released new interior renders of the upcoming, I'm going to butcher this name, Moto Panfilo. You just need that rhythm. 45, which will be the first to feature the brand's new veranda deck, which completely opens up the main saloon. So they announced that after the success of their Oasis deck. But the biggest announcement from Benetti was, of course, a new range of super yachts called the B-Loft. So the exterior reminds me a little bit, actually, of FedShip's Obsidian. But it was designed by Giorgio Cassetta and is the yard's first take on city living. So there are these amazing 4 meter high ceilings on both the main deck and the upper deck. According to Giorgio, it's meant to emulate the airy layouts you'd find in metropolitan residential lofts. The yacht also has a new cabana-style beach club with a pair of fold-out wings for 270-degree ocean access. And the initial model they showed us was 65 meters, but there should be a smaller and a bigger model to accompany it at least.
Another very nice-looking boat. Giorgio Cassetta is having the time of his life.
On a roll. I asked him, actually, after that conference, I go, when do you sleep?
Yeah.
Between Raw, the B Loft, and what was the other one he did? Serena? No.
He seems to be working with a ton of different shipyards on a ton of different projects. It's funny, isn't it, how some design studios go through these really power phases, and Cassetta definitely is experiencing one at the minute. He is a man in great demand.
Mm-hmm.
A few owners I've spoken to seem they really enjoy working with him. Which is great to have those solid relationships with shipyards and also the end user. So they, you know, and that's when, some you kind of elevate after a while into this next tier of design brand, I suppose. And when owners start saying, I want a Cassetta boat, just like, you know, the true greats of the industry.
He only founded his design studio in 2015.
Mm.
So he's had such a quick rise in the industry.
Yeah, amazing success. He's a very talented guy. So that helps a great deal. Serena Yachts, meanwhile, unveiled a 36-meter flagship model called the Serena 118 at the show. It'll be the yard's largest yacht made from composite and has been designed in-house with interiors from Core D Rover. The yard dedicated a lot of attention to the owner's area, which is located forward on the main deck and can extend across two decks. It has a spiral staircase that connects to a private relaxation space on the lower deck, also with a fold-down balcony.
I was actually there for this next one, so I mentioned it earlier, but Tankoa Yachts announced a 52-meter model at the show called the T520 Fenice. It was named after the famous opera house in Venice, fun fact. But this model is meant as a smaller version of its T680 Fenice, which was first revealed in 2022. But this one actually looks really quite distinct. They were both designed by Enrico Gobbi, but this one has a traditional bow, which we haven't actually seen on a Tankoa yacht for some years now, or at least I don't think. They've become quite well known for their plum bow, which came into fashion a couple of years ago, so they kind of ran with it. But anyway, it's got this gorgeous gray hull, and it's got that hidden secondary beach club for some extra privacy that I mentioned. And I thought it was a really interesting design, and again, just a beautiful boat.
Yeah, another great-looking boat from Tankoa. Also in Italy, Mangusta revealed a new 51-meter Oceano model that is also in build. It builds on the popularity of the smaller Oceano yachts and features a first-of-its-kind pool that sits on the beach club right on the water's edge. According to the yard, the new model will become the flagship of the line but will not replace the existing Oceano 50.
Last up, Satura Studio released an 82-meter yacht concept called Nami, which is apparently the Japanese word for wave, and it was engineered by the Rome-based firm HPE Studio with another massive beach club. So there was a lot of news from this year's Monaco Yacht Show, and I don't think we have time to cover it all. Did we miss anything?
Surely.
Yeah, probably.
But it's all on the website.
Very true.
So, and we'll put links to all these stories in the description so you can read them at length and at leisure for yourself. But just as we're getting over Monaco, I look ahead at the diary and think, oh God, there's a bit coming up, isn't there? So the America's Cup is ongoing. The finals of the Louis Vuitton Cup are being contested between Luna Rossa and Ineos right now. And race 8 took place just before we started recording. So it's 4 all in this 1-7 competition. The winner obviously goes on, wins the right to challenge Emirates Team New Zealand in the America's Cup match, which kicks off on the 12th of October. I think I've got that right. So I'm going to head down there this weekend to check out the Barcelona Superyacht Regatta, which is taking place, and also hopefully catch a bit of the J-class racing, which happens shortly after. And then we have an event taking place on the 12th of October at the Maritime Museum. And we're inviting some owners and some other guests to come and join us for what should be a really, really special evening on kind of the first day of the America's Cup match, in which I'm hoping it is Ineos taking on Emirates Team New Zealand. We do have some Italians in the office, so there's a bit of banter back and forth between our Italian colleagues and us Brits about who should win the Louis Vuitton Cup.
I'm a little handicapped when it comes to all things sports, I'm afraid. But yes, go Team Boat.
Go Team Boat. Okay. Well, so there's more Brits and Italians, so we're all Ineos fans.
Okay.
So go Ben. Go Sir Ben. Get through this one, and then we can beat the Kiwis in the America's Cup match. Then we can return the America's Cup to cows, where it rightfully belongs. Wouldn't that be great?
I feel like you're speaking to the wrong person here, but yes, absolutely.
But it's really exciting. It's really, really exciting stuff. I'm loving watching it. So that's Barcelona for the next little period. Then we've got Fort Lauderdale Boat Show at the end of the month. Shortly after that, the Explore Yacht Summit taking place in Monaco on the 13th of November.
At which I will be giving the restaurateur his hat.
You'll be returning the favour, the mm-hmm. tiramisu favour. The juice has been running on that favour, so you might have to give him 2 hats.
Okay.
Maybe 2 hats and a t-shirt.
Hat and that shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Sorensen shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Metz. And then a few of us, there's an event down in Sydney in Australia at the Royal Sydney Yacht Squadron, then another event in New York. So it's all go. It's all go for the last third of the year.
Are you going to all of these?
Most of them.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's busy. It's very, very busy. But it always seems to be this crazy running. And then before you know it, it's the boat Christmas party. And then I sleep for 2 weeks.
No, you won't. You'll be working.
That's true. But before we go, we should also flag that the monstrous 400-page October issue of Boat International is out now. A few boats we've mentioned already feature star in this issue. Kismet is on the cover. So if you didn't get a chance to go to Monaco and you're one of only about 3 people allowed to tour the boat during the show, then relish in this wonderful feature in the Boat International October issue. It's beautifully written, beautifully photographed, and it's a great insight into a great, great yacht. And hopefully you'll recognize some of the spaces I was talking about earlier in the photos in the feature. Planet Nine's also in there, an interview with Nat Rothschild and the captain of the boat, talking about some of the cool stuff they've done. There's an owner's club interview with Deborah Rubin, the owner of 73.5 meter Siren, on talking about her life in boats, which is fascinating. One of the great feature.
He can't even get through it.
Oh, God. So, yeah. So this story is also on the website now.
What's the boat called?
We'll get to that. It's about a 55-meter Fed ship from 1996. The boat is now known as Olympus, but it was delivered infamously as Motor Yacht Tits.
For all the people who can't see him, Stuart is squirming in his seat right now.
I mean, it's excruciating, isn't it? But it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. So we went through a few iterations, this tale, and was thoroughly checked over by our lawyers before we printed it. But oh my God, what a story. I don't think it's ever been told in print before.
Why was it Why were there potential legal ramifications?
Well, because I can't really talk about them. But yeah, so it's been checked out. So one former crew member in the story recounts it wasn't just the scale of the lit up capital letters referring to the name of the boat.
Tits
on the sitting up there on the superstructure. It was also the undulating line beneath the boat's name, forming two domed shapes, and it left no room for doubt about what it signified. I mean, my God. So the boat ended up in Brunei. It was obviously, I should have mentioned, it was owned by Prince Geoffrey. It ended up in Brunei as part of a growing royal fleet. And the route down to the Southeast Asian country provided a few interesting moments. Sailing from Dutch waters for Brunei, the crew became aware of an ongoing challenge communicating with the outside world. One crew member said, on the radio, there would be this incredulous silence on the other end after we had been asked to repeat and spell out her name. And they started making up acronyms, such as, instead of making TIT stand for Travelling in Tranquil Seas, was their gambit.
Invented.
Another invented story was that the yacht's tenders were called Nipple 1 and Nipple 2, which is not true. Apparently, the crew were out for a beer one night in Parma or somewhere similar and were joking about what they would call the tenders if they had to name them. And obviously, this was overheard by a local journalist who ran it, I think in the Mallorca Daily Bulletin, which then picked up by the Daily Mail and various other newspapers and printed as fact.
I think I would have just gone with thing one, thing two.
Yeah, I think so too. But there's loads of other great detail in the story, like encountering some of the extraordinary wildlife in Brunei. Jellyfish apparently the size of dustbin lids and gibbons screaming to each other in the night, and you know, royals driving around in Ferraris and crocodiles and huge lizards and bugs the size of bats. And yeah, I don't want to spoil the story too much, but I loved reading it. It is a brilliant tale, expertly told by Daniel Pembury, who is one of our great freelancers, who's quickly building a reputation for himself as one of the great storytellers of our trade.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to go read this tomorrow.
Oh, it's a brilliant story. But anyway, I was distracted. So elsewhere in the October issue, obviously we have our traditional design report, which is a brilliant examination of all the wonderful fabrics, interiors, items, trends, furniture, etc. that you need to look at if you're considering a refit or a new build. Some brilliant stuff in there. We've got a story about the new age or the new frontier of underwater exploration, which involves these kind of large underwater habitats for long-term living. Toto Wolff, the boss of Mercedes F1 team, was interviewed by none other than Georgie Ainsley.
I can't believe you got him for boat.
Yeah, well, Georgie did the hard yards on that one, so she's a star. So Georgie, obviously, TV presenter, celebrity in her own right, and also wife of Sir Ben Ainsley, captain of the Ineos America's Cup team. So, yeah, Georgie got that interview and spoke to Toto at great length. He likes to go freediving with Lewis Hamilton. Did you know?
I do now. I read it yesterday.
There you go. We got a wild water special. Lots of small boats tested and driven very hard, including two by you, Gabby.
One of them was those were my favorite stories I've ever written. They're so fun.
They are fun, aren't they? It's just an excuse to, you know,
go out someplace nice, yeah. Drive a cool boat.
Yeah.
It's a hard job.
It's tough, isn't it? The owners of Vianara recount a wonderful South Seas cruise on their Pendennis-built truly classic 128. That's a great tale of adventure in the South Seas. And a shout out, last but not least, to the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Eddie Jordan. He's not feeling very well at the moment. So if you're listening to this, EJ, get better soon, buddy. He has been writing for Boat International for 10 years. 10 whole years, which is amazing.
My dad actually was telling me that that's one of his favorite parts.
Excellent.
Of the magazine. Excellent. Keeps him coming back every month.
There you go, EJ. in the latest his latest entry, he met Tom Cruise. He meets Tom Cruise and invited him on stage to play a song with him. But
okay.
Tom had to, you know, abseil into the Paris Olympics, so he had to depart very quickly on a helicopter. You'll get him next time, EJ.
Classic Tom.
And that's it from this year's Monaco Yacht Show. But this week's boat briefing. Gabby, thanks once again for joining me.
No problem at all. My pleasure.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Amico and Co. And thank you all for listening to this week's episode, which was mixed and produced by the wonderful team of Naomi Wilson and Adam Geist.
I thought you were going to say Adam Wilson again.
Adam Wilson and Naomi Geist, and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.